This is A-State Connections on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves. This is the weekly segment called A-State Connections and Create at State, making connections that count. In this interview, I talk with Professor of Plant Biotechnology, Dr. Gregory Phillips, and Molecular Biosciences graduate student, Brent Hale. They talk about research involving soybeans. Dr. Phillips starts the interview.
Well, we have an unusual research project. We're trying to take the immature pollen grains of soybeans and trick them into becoming plants directly without going through fertilization and seed formation. And the value to this would be that as a gamete or a haploid, every gene is expressed. There's no dominance or recessiveness, so you don't mask any genes. They all are expressed. And then we have methods to double the chromosomes, and it makes an exact copy of the first set, and now you have a normal diploid plant that can undergo sexual mating and reproduction, and every trait is fixed. So this breeding technology is one that's been used for a number of crops, and it saves a lot of money for the breeders, and it gets new traits to the producers faster. So this would be a big deal for the soybean industry. They've never had access to this technology before, and it would be very important. When I stepped down as Dean of Agriculture, I started looking around Arkansas. Soybeans very important, as is rice and others, but soybean is probably the number one cash crop year in, year out for Arkansan producers. And I knew about this technology from my background in biotechnology, and I thought this would be a significant contribution to Arkansas agriculture and to the soybean industry if we can make it work.
Right. And so tell us about, Brent, how you got involved in this research, if you don't mind, please.
Sure. So I've actually been involved with this project a lot longer than I've been a graduate student. So I had Dr. Phillips my freshman year of college, my very first semester actually, in an introductory plant science class, and he gave me the opportunity to start working in his lab on this soybean androgenesis project. So starting in the spring of my freshman year of college, so January of 2015, I joined Dr. Phillips' lab at ABI and began working with the PhD student at the time to develop this platform. After graduation in 2017, I went and worked for a soybean genetics company, got some field experience, a little bit of hands-on breeding, and was really able to see the application of this powerful tool that we had been working on. So I came back to ABI, and I'm working with Dr. Phillips to continue developing this tool to take to producers.
Right, and from what you were saying, Dr. Phillips, this will be huge by way of taking something that might be like a several-year project, by way of development in that and having it much, much faster, which means that it can help out with the soybeans by way of productivity, profits and those kinds of things. Tell us about, is this something that you all do in the field or strictly in the lab?
The vast majority of this work is done in the laboratory. We do grow plants, donor plants, in growth chambers because the temperature and lighting is better regulated than in a greenhouse or in the field. So we can predict and stage reproduction more accurately using the growth chambers. So we're basically all in the laboratory at this point. If we can recover those doubled haploid plants from the immature pollen, then those will eventually get back to the field.
Is this something that helps with like disease resilience or anything like that? Or you know, because you have some crops like rice, for example, where you may have some kinds of rice that are probably more resilient to heat, stresses, disease, those things. Is it any of that kind of research in what you're doing for soybeans? For different soybean varieties?
Absolutely. soybean varieties are bred for specific regions. So soybeans are adapted from the northernmost tip of the United States all the way down to the Gulf Coast, north to south. But you can't grow the same varieties everywhere. Up north, they have much shorter growing seasons and different disease problems. Down south, we have longer growing seasons. We make better yields because of that. But then we have additional disease problems because of the longer growing season.
Right.
So the advantage of this tool, the double haploid breeding tool, is that if you have some other variety, perhaps that's not adapted to your area, or maybe isn't in an adapted soybean at all, maybe in a wild accession, wild species. With this tool, you can make a cross and recover something that looks like your cultivated soybean, but bring in that one trait for disease resistance. Let's say, what was your example, Brett? Frog eye?
Frog eye leaf spot.
Frog eye leaf spot. If we could pull that in from a resistant line into our regionally adapted cultivars, that would help our producers immensely.
Right. So tell us about frog eye leaf spot.
So frog eye leaf spot is a disease that a lot of growers in Arkansas struggle with. From my experience working for a soybean genetics company, this is one of the major diseases that we go to the field and we scout for. And of course, it's something that breeders have been able to kind of wrangle and keep control of, but with changing climate conditions, hotter day temperatures, hotter night temperatures, these diseases find ways to be more resilient. So a tool like we're developing would allow breeders to stay on top of this evolving disease.
And I can tell the passion that you have for this. This is really right up your alley. Is it something, have you always had a love for agriculture? Have you always had that, Brent? Or is it something that you kind of really developed as you started going through Dr. Phillips's lab? Mm-hmm.
So that's a great question. I've always wanted to be involved in agriculture. So I did 4-H growing up. I did FFA in high school and I loved it. But I didn't come from a family farm. So I came to college. I knew I wanted to study agriculture, but I had all this passion and it wasn't directed. So I was actually an agricultural systems technology major when I started in Dr. Phillips' lab. And it's there when I was working with him and the students he had in the lab that I developed a passion for plant science and saw this is an area where I can take my interests, my passions, I can channel them in a way that's productive and that will ultimately help growers and consumers.
How has it been working with Dr. Phillips over these years and that, and how has he had that impact on your life?
Sure. Well, Dr. Phillips is great. If he wasn't, I wouldn't have chosen to keep working with him for so long. Dr. Phillips is a great mentor. He guides me when I need it. He also allows me to develop my own independence as a researcher. Something that I've really gain from working with Dr. Phillips directly is not only technical skills in the lab, but also how to approach research, how to approach troubleshooting, because research is definitely not a linear process. There's a lot of ups and downs, especially with difficult projects like we're tackling. So just the way to approach the issues, the way to approach other people, and to think about things philosophically, I've really gained a lot working with Dr. Phillips in his lab for the last 5 years now.
And you can tell just how smart that Brent is. And I imagine that you see a lot of the research that he does tell about what you think about how he's been, doing by way of working with you in these, in this research.
Well, Brett has been an exceptional student. He was a very good student in his classes as an undergraduate. He was able to put things together better than the typical undergraduate student. Gained some technical skills with his hands. But as a master student, coming back as a master student, Brett is really, really shining now. He's really putting things together. He's thinking more critically. His colleagues and peers around the country that he's interacted with have seen that and commented back to me that he's really boring into this information, digging very deep, thinking deeply about it. His first year, Brett was more productive with research than any first year graduate student I've had. So he's been a joy to work with. The previous student, Martina, and I had developed the rudiments of this platform, but what Brett has added to it is he's been hearing all of the questions and comments from our colleagues around the country, questioning, well, how do you know this? How do you know that? Are you sure about this? Are you sure about that? Brett's been paying attention to all of those criticisms, and his master's thesis has really focused on providing the evidence that proves this is a real system, that what we say is happening is in fact happening.
Brent, can you give us an example of that, please?
Sure. So one of the issues when you're doing the type of work that we are doing is that we're working with gametes, like immature pollen grains, mm-hmm. But those gametes are found in tissues that are somatic, meaning that they're not the gametes, they're the other body cells of the organism or of the plant, and they are diploid. So we are starting with cells, immature pollen grains, that are haploid. We're doubling their chromosome count, and we're making them diploid. So a question that comes out a lot is, how do you know the structures that you have truly came from your immature pollen grains? How do you know that it's not some other tissue that you don't want, that it's not a false positive? And that's a great question, and it's not an easy question to answer. So something that I've spent a lot of time working on is using flow cytometry, a technique that is fluorescence-based to be able to accurately tell us the poity of our cells. And by developing a protocol for flow cytometry, we've been able to show that, yes, our cultures have these immature microspores, and they're haploid. Over time, we're providing them the right conditions to undergo spontaneous chromosome doubling. And by documenting that, we're showing that, yes, we are taking these haploid cells and we're making them doubled haploid. We're making them diploid, and these aren't the plant somatic cells or body cells.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about, and this work is going on, as you say, across the country, from what I understand. Is that right? Is it going on? You say you had partners and that they're kind of working across the country in this?
We've presented our results at national and international meetings.
Mm-hmm.
The most recent one was in Tampa, Florida. Brett presented his work there at the Society for In Vitro Biology annual meetings. So we've gotten a lot of feedback from colleagues at meetings. And we do have a collaboration with people at Corteva Agriscience, which was formerly Pioneer Hybrid. So many producers would recognize Pioneer, but maybe not have caught on to Corteva as their new brand name now.
Right.
But that's a company that's worked with doubled haploids with other crops very successfully. They sort of invented doubled haploids with maize about 100 years ago. So they have a great interest in this. They would love to have it for soybean. And they've been very helpful providing access to their facilities and instrumentation and the lead scientists in their groups working on maize and other crops in this technology. So their knowledge about the other systems have been helpful to us to guide us with soybean. Giving access to Brett for their facilities has given us better data, stronger data, and has introduced Brett to more of the ins and outs of the technology and what a company is really looking for with this kind of platform.
And with this, Brett, I know that you said that one of the things that kind of fueled your passion is that you graduated, you went out into the field, and you really were able to see the application process. And doing that. And that must have really been really eye-opening to be able to see all of this that you've been working on to apply it and fuel, and I think, as you said, bore into what you're wanting to do now. How important was that application process for you?
You know, the application process was very, very important for me because, as I mentioned earlier, I don't come from a farming background.
So
I had studied soybean in class. I had studied it in the lab, but actually seeing what a breeder has to go through to bring a certain trait package to market really opened my eyes to the power of this technology. So, you know, I was a geneticist, an assistant plant breeder for this company, and I was in charge of taking people to the field, and we would plant seed all day and all night, and we were paying all these people, and then we were putting out fertilizer, and we were irrigating and doing all these things throughout the growing season, collecting the seed, doing all these genetic screens, germination testing, and all these things, and then turning around and doing it the next year. And then that happens year and year and year. And just the power of the technology that we're trying to provide of shortening that, helping the producer, helping the breeder, you know, it's going to have a lot of application to soybean, the soybean industry.
I appreciate you both coming up, and thank you for this time. How do you think that this, Dr. Phillips, and as you said that you had stepped down as the dean of agriculture and that, and you're kind of devoting this is kind of what you're doing now, is that right? You're just doing this kind of on a full-time basis. But it must give you some pride to know that Arkansas State in this regard is kind of having that impact to be able to help not only soybean farmers here in this part of you know, the smaller part of the nation, but also across the nation, literally.
Absolutely. That was one of the things that attracted me to Arkansas State to begin with, is the fact that this Delta region here in northeast Arkansas, eastern Arkansas, is one of the best kept agricultural secrets in the country. We're just as productive, just as competitive as the Midwest farmers, as the Californians, the Floridans. There's a, you know, this Delta region is part of the breadbasket that is the U.S. agricultural sector, you know, both in livestock and in crops. And so Arkansas may not be the biggest producer of soybean. I think we're around 9th or 10th among the states. But again, year in, year out, soybean probably is the biggest cash crop, just edging out rice most years for Arkansan producers. So it's really important. Seeing that we've got a great production system, we've got good producers, having been a dean for several years, it gave me the broader perspective to see how larger impacts could be made in the industry. And that's one reason that I was led to follow this kind of new technology for soybean, because I could see it would have impact. It's for a major crop. It's important locally. It's important nationally, internationally. What's not to like?
Brent, I think you'd probably agree with that. What's not to like? Where do you see yourself in this research, you know, as you go forward into the future?
Well, that's a great question. For myself, whether I continue to work on this particular area of research or not, I've been able to gain a lot of skills, both technically as well as just my mental approach to research that I can take into other areas of plant science research or even beyond plant science and just agricultural research in general. So, you know, this project has very well equipped me, I feel like, for my future in research. And this project, I'm very excited because, you know, we, of course, are passionate about it. We're interested, and so are a lot of other people. So even once we conclude our work, we're confident that other research groups are going to pick it up and are going to help help it reach its full potential.
Professor of Plant Biotechnology, Dr. Gregory Phillips, and Molecular Biosciences graduate student, Brent Hale, on the Created State Podcast. To hear more interviews like this one, you can subscribe to the Created State Podcast on the Created State Podcast page on KASU.org, also available through iTunes or Google Play or on Spotify. And tell others about the Created State Podcast and leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you. And you're listening to A-State Connections on KASU.